the HIV theory has been challenged for well over a decade in many scientific publications, principally by Peter Duesberg from the USA and Eleni Papadopoulos-Eliopoulos and her colleagues in Perth, Western Australia. Another of the challenges to mainstream thinking about HIV/AIDS is Christine Maggiore, who is the author of What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Was Wrong? Maggiore's book tells us that AIDS is nothing like we have been told. What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Was Wrong? Deconstructs popular myths about AIDS and fortifies its scientific data with powerful accounts from HIV positives who, like author Christine Maggiore, defy the HIV equals AIDS equals death paradigm by living in wellness without pharmaceutical treatments and without fear of AIDS. This information may be new to the listener. I interviewed the author Christine Maggiore, whose own HIV positive diagnosis didn't stop her from disobeying the authorities and giving birth to a healthy child, challenging all the politically correct opinions about the health crisis. Christine Maggiore begins the story telling us how she received her positive diagnosis and what she has subsequently learnt about HIV/AIDS.
My first test result was positive, and upon that basis I was given a 5 to 7 year death sentence, basically. But a year and a half into my diagnosis and into public service that I had become involved in, that is, I became a public speaker and an educator for several mainstream AIDS organizations, I found a new doctor who urged me to retest. My results came back indeterminate, positive, negative, and positive. And in examining why that would happen to me in my search for understanding about these contradictory test results, I ran into scientific, medical, and epidemiological data that put into question everything that I had been taught and everything that I was teaching other people.
So what did you find?
I found the works of scientists like Dr. Peter Duesberg and others, international news reports, scientific studies that showed how the premise upon which the entire HIV equals AIDS hypothesis is based is faulty, and that's the best part. Most of it is just lacking in good solid evidence, and I was very shocked to find that the things that I had accepted as true were a bunch of beliefs and leaps of faith. For example, that I was diagnosed HIV positive was a leap of faith, because the tests have no capacity to diagnose actual infection with HIV, to detect or measure the presence of the actual virus, or to determine if someone has HIV-specific antibodies or genetic markers in their blood. No HIV test, current or past, has ever been validated against the direct finding of virus in anybody who tests HIV positive or who has symptoms associated with AIDS. What's wrong with the tests is that they've never been made right. And we have the technology, we have all the tools necessary to do so. So it becomes a big question. Why are we diagnosing people with HIV infection with tests that have no capacity to give that kind of a diagnosis?
In order to make sense of the science, I spoke with biophysicist Eleni Papadopoulos-Eliopoulos, who is the leader of the Perth Group, which was formed in 1981 at the Royal Perth Hospital, a public teaching hospital affiliated with the University of Western Australia.
The proteins which are present in the test kits and are said to be HIV proteins have never been proven to be HIV or to belong to any other virus. In fact, in 1997, Luc Montagnier, the discoverer of the virus which is called HIV now, which we say that there never has been any proof for its existence, Luc Montagnier in 1997 admitted that what he called HIV proteins were taken from a material where even with very, what he calls it, Roman effort, could not see any particles which looked like a virus. So the proteins, definitely the proteins which are in the test kits are not HIV proteins. Now, the blood of patients with TB, for example, they have antibodies which have been proven by no less an authority on HIV and AIDS than Max Essex from Harvard University, that these antibodies, which are directed against the organism which causes TB, react with the proteins which are present in the test kit. Anyone who has TB, who has leprosy, who has... And there is evidence for hepatitis too, they will react with the proteins which are present in the test kit. So you can say you have an HIV antibody test which is positive, and they define it as proof for HIV infection.
Papadopoulos says that these HIV proteins in the HIV test kits are nothing but cellular proteins.
When you do the HIV antibody test, you have some test kits. You know, they are bought. The manufacturer just makes them, and the people who perform these tests, they buy them. And they say that in these kits, they have the HIV proteins. But you cannot have HIV proteins unless you take them from an HIV particle. This never has been done. We have ample evidence that these proteins are nothing else but cellular proteins.
Christine Maggie Ori again.
There's some primary truths that most people are unaware of and may only become aware of when they're put in a position like me of investigating this in order to save their own lives. I think one of the most important issues that is very overlooked is the fact that HIV tests have never been approved in this country by the Food and Drug Administration that approves all our drugs and medical diagnostics. They've never approved any HIV test at all for diagnosing HIV infection. The Western blot, the ELISA, urine, blood, viral load, there's no HIV test used anywhere, no laboratory procedure used anywhere that actually diagnoses the presence of HIV virus in any human being.
The definitive existence of any virus, including a retrovirus, can be proven only by isolating it. For nearly half a century, retroviruses have been isolated by banding in density gradients. It is accepted that the procedures incorporated into this method, which is by no means perfect, have not been followed by the researchers who claim isolation of the human immunodeficiency virus HIV. Nonetheless, it is said that at present there is ample evidence that HIV has been isolated and shown to be a unique exogenous retrovirus.
Now, I'm not a scientist, but from what I understand from reading the scientific literature, there are claims of HIV isolation, but isolation has come to mean many different things to many different people. But in the classic sense, in the true sense, in the pure scientific sense of isolation, no, I don't see any evidence that HIV has been properly isolated according to what I would consider proper, normal, ethical, scientific standards, and ones that would assure that we have tests that work properly and are able to diagnose actual infection. When you're diagnosing a fatal disease, you want to be absolutely certain. And the evidence that I see shows that we have no certainty whatsoever.
More from Professor Eleni Papadopoulos on this crucial point.
To say that a disease is caused by an agent, the first thing which you have to have is proof that the agent exists. And as far as myself and what is called the Perth group, that is my colleagues, as far as we are concerned, no such proof exists. To prove the existence of a retrovirus, HIV is said to be a special virus, to belong to a special family of viruses called retroviruses. And to prove the existence of such viruses, you have to isolate them. That is, you have to obtain the virus particles separate from everything else. You must have proof for the existence of a mass of material which contains nothing else but particles which look like retroviruses, what is called pure isolated virus. There have been thousands of papers, and even today, you know, the HIV AIDS experts, protagonists, claim that there are thousands of such performances done every day. But to claim that isolation does is performed, you must have proof, and it's easy to get that proof by taking a picture of what you call isolated virus or purified virus. We cannot see viruses because too small, but we can take pictures with the electron microscope. And this is very easily done and has been done for a long time, yet nobody has done it for HIV. In fact, we've been asking, we are directly and all the time asking for such a picture. And in 1997, a French journalist asked Professor Luc Montagnier from the Pasteur Institute, which was the first person to claim isolation, purification of HIV, and he's accepted to be, and his group, Professor Montagnier and his group are accepted to be the people who have proven the existence of HIV, why he hasn't published such a picture? That we've been asking for such picture, and why they have not published it. And his answer was that when they look at the material which they called pure HIV, isolated HIV particles, in that material they could not see even particles which look like retroviruses, much less a particle which had some special morphology, that is a special retrovirus particle. This is really I don't know what word to use, but it's really incredible.
AIDS stands for Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome and is the broad term used to describe numerous diseases that affect humans as a result of immune system suppression.
In the 1980s, when it first appeared that gay men were suffering from a particular sort of a health syndrome, our virologists here in this country moved very quickly to identify some kind of a virus. That's their job as virologists. Mm-hmm. And on the presumption that gay men have one thing in common, sex, they opted to search for a sexually transmitted virus. And they moved very, very quickly due to public pressure, due to funding considerations, due to the political and social atmosphere. And basically what we did is we integrated in a very powerful system worldwide based on scant information, prejudicial ideas, and very poor science. And now we find ourselves in the terrible position of having to go back and rethink this and try to do so while these enormous structures are in place.
Now, most people may not know that AIDS is not a disease. At the beginning, in 1982, AIDS, for all practical purposes, were two diseases. A pneumonia, that is a lung disease, pneumocystic carinii pneumonia, and a malignancy called Kaposi sarcoma. But then the HIV AIDS expert redefined AIDS many times, and they start introducing other diseases as being AIDS. Now, not one of these diseases is new. They all existed long before AIDS.
Back in April 1984, Dr. Robert Gallo announced that he had discovered the probable cause of AIDS, a new retrovirus later named HIV. Gallo's statement was made at an international press conference. Circumventing essential rules of the scientific process, he presented no evidence for his hypothesis that HIV caused AIDS. He had not published his research findings in any scientific or medical journal where they would be subject to the normal process of peer review prior to being announced to the public. The same day of his infamous press conference, Gallo filed a patent application for an HIV antibody test, now known as the AIDS test, and all federally funded research examining other possible causes of AIDS came to an abrupt halt. The evidence that Gallo proposed for his HIV hypothesis was published several weeks after his April the 24th press conference. The research described in this paper revealed that less than half of the AIDS patients he had used in his study were infected with HIV. A congressional investigation later determined that Gallo had not discovered HIV. The virus Gallo claimed to have found had actually been taken from a sample sent to him by a French virologist, Luc Montagnier, who had isolated retroviral particles from the lymph nodes of a male homosexual without AIDS. At the 1993 International AIDS Conference, Dr. Montagnier stated that HIV may be benign. And further explanation from Professor Eleni Papadopoulos, biophysicist and leader of the Perth Group of HIV/AIDS researchers.
Professor Luc Montagnier and Dr. Gallo did, and everybody, they take some tissue from AIDS patients and they put it in a PET or in a tube where they have some other cells there, either some leukemic cells or cells they take from healthy people, and then they treat them with a lot of chemicals. Now, if you do the same thing to these cells without the addition of tissue from AIDS patients, you'll get exactly the same particles. So, you know, you cannot say that these particles, the particles which cause AIDS, you can get them in any culture you want as long as you have the right conditions.
Professor Eleni Papadopoulos, leader of the Perth Group.
In Africa, you can call a person with TB without doing any other test as being an AIDS patient. Now, in Africa, in 1990, 3 million people around the world died from TB. TB existed forever, and it's nothing new. Millions of people die from TB. Now you can call TB AIDS if you want, and that's what is happening. 90% of AIDS today is from the developing country, that is Asia and Africa. Mm. And the vast majority of people from there are said to have AIDS because they have TB. But TB, as I said, exists forever. If you do an antibody test in these people, they will test positive. Because this hasn't been shown by us. This has been shown by one of the best HIV AIDS experts, Max Essex, from Harvard University, you know, and he has shown that the bacteria, the organism which causes TB, can make antibodies which will react with the proteins which are present in the antibody test kit. To have AIDS in Africa, in fact, to have millions of AIDS cases in a year, well, you don't need HIV. The Africans are suffering from TB, and TB is an AIDS-defining disease. But the problem for calling these people suffering from AIDS is that TB existed in Africa forever in epidemic proportions, about the same incident as it is in the AIDS era. But from 1987, TB, which was present in organs other than the lungs, for no reasons at all, was said to be an AIDS disease. So anybody who had TB in organs other than the lung, it was called an AIDS patient. And since 1993, the AIDS was redefined again, and anybody who has TB anywhere, even if it's not tested for HIV or for immune deficiency, is said to have AIDS. So in Africa, you can have any number of of AIDS patients just by making TB an AIDS-defining disease.
There are 60 factors known to cause false positive HIV antibody test results. Having had TB, leprosy, herpes, malaria, or even being the recipient of a flu vaccine can give a positive HIV test. Maggie Ory explains.
In my book, I list about 60 different conditions that are known in the medical literature, and there are many, many more that we're learning about. But I think the important thing to understand is people think, oh, a false positive test result means one time it comes back positive and then that's easily corrected by further testing. Unfortunately, the things that can cause a false positive test result include pregnancy, prior pregnancy, exposure to various diseases such as malaria, tuberculosis, autoimmune disorders such as lupus, even alcoholic hepatitis, certain vaccines. The antibodies that those create in our system stay with us our whole lives, so if our antibodies are reacting on an HIV test and creating a positive test result, it's uncommon for those antibodies to go away with further testing and for someone to be exonerated through further testing. People can test false positive for their entire life.
And with dire consequences.
Extremely dire consequences, ranging from loss of human and civil rights, inability to travel to obtain health insurance or life insurance. It could mean the end of relationships. It could mean being medicated for a condition a person doesn't have with medicines that oftentimes put people's lives and health at risk. The notion that HIV causes AIDS has yet to be proven. Here in the United States, it's been 20 years and $90 billion of our taxpayers' money into AIDS research, and scientists still have no explanation as to how or why HIV causes AIDS. I also think we need to understand that any diagnostic test, when applied to a population of people that do not suffer from the problem the test is looking for, loses whatever rate of accuracy it may have. HIV tests have no accuracy established by the only way in which one can establish accuracy, which is the direct finding of virus in a person who tests positive. We have claims of accuracy of 99.9% and so forth that are based on assumptions and estimates. But even if you were to agree with these assumptions and estimates and say that these tests are 99.9% accurate, when they're applied to a group of people, such as pregnant women, who are not in AIDS risk groups, who do not normally manifest any of the diseases or symptoms of AIDS, the test loses whatever accuracy it has, and its accuracy level actually descends below 50%. The more we apply the test, the less accurate it becomes when we're applying it to a population of people who don't have the problem the test is looking to identify. We hear all the time how Africa is being devastated by AIDS, but if you look at the numbers, not the estimates and projections, which are all based on computer models, which are based on feeding in very speculative data, if you look at the actual numbers, worldwide we're at about 2.2 million cases of AIDS in the entire history of the AIDS epidemic. The entire continent of Africa has about the same number of AIDS cases as we have here in the U.S. Yet in Africa, there's at least 2.5 times the population of the U.S. In Africa, it's said that entire villages and nations are being wiped out. Yet all of these are based on estimates and projections and relabeling old problems in Africa, such as starvation, the effects of civil war and drought, lack of access to basic medical care, unsanitary living conditions, relabeling those as AIDS, and instead of resolving the underlying causes of what is called AIDS now, we're just throwing condoms at people and demanding that the nations pay for expensive toxic drugs. In South Africa, which is said to be the epicenter of AIDS, estimates are that there's between 4 and 5 million cases of AIDS currently. However, since 1981, the UN AIDS reports only about 13,000 diagnosed cases of AIDS. And in a recent article in Rolling Stone magazine, a journalist set out to discover what was going on with these devastatingly high numbers and found he couldn't find the bodies. Unfortunately, the journalism that's honest and objective, this journalist actually set out to write a piece that would condemn the president of South Africa for his hesitation to adopt the Western model of HIV and AIDS. He could find no information as a good and honest journalist to take the president to task for the positions he's held, and no substantiation for the enormous numbers that are coming out of his country in South Africa.
This is the end of part one.